It's been years in the making, but now the Supreme Court is ready to consider whether a 15-second silent prayer on the 50-yard line can get you fired. They'll also decide a whole lot more in the process. I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is First Liberty Live. You know, the First Liberty Live app is a great way to follow these notifications. You can download it to your phone or tablet. It's for all platforms that are out there. BlackBerry's gone now, of course, so you can't do that. But you can keep up with these conversations. It will let you know when new ones are posted, so you don't miss a single one. Again, just search for First Liberty Live in the App Store, Google Play, whatever they call that over there. Mike Berry is general counsel here at First Liberty Institute. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Stuart.
Thanks for being with us today. First, just to get everybody up to speed, give me the 20-second version of what this case is all about.
Well, the case really at its root is about whether or not a public high school football coach has the right under the First Amendment to our Constitution to say a brief personal prayer by himself at the 50-yard line at the end of every football game.
All right. And that's there he is right there. I mean, we've got him in the big picture. Obviously, the football field is not actually at the Supreme Court, but that is the actual Bremerton High School field and Joe Kennedy there in the middle. I put into context for the rest of us how big a deal this is to have this case accepted by the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, the numbers tell the story, right? On any given year, the Supreme Court probably receives somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 applications. They're called a petition for certiorari. Yeah. is the legal term. For most people, we just think of that as just asking the Supreme Court to hear your case. So anywhere between 8,000 and 10,000 are submitted to the court every year, and they take somewhere just under 1%. All right, so roughly, you know, 70-ish. In any given year is how many cases we heard. So to have one of your cases heard before the Supreme Court in any given year means, you know, that you really have kind of hit the jackpot for that particular year. And there's a lot of strategy that goes. I mean, there are entire legal practice groups set up just to figure out the strategy of how to get a case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And for many attorneys, getting one case in your entire legal career at the U.S. Supreme Court is considered a real milestone achievement as an attorney.
You put it on your resume, and we've currently
you hang it on your wall. I mean, you'll frame it and put it on your wall.
We've currently got the case out of Maine on school choice that was heard just a few weeks ago that they're currently considering. Now we've got this case that they've just agreed to take up. This is an unusual time for First Liberty Institute. We've not seen anything like this.
Yeah, you know, look, here we are right in the middle of the NFL playoff season, and for attorneys, going to the Supreme Court is like going to the Super Bowl. And of course, as we know, Stuart, you can't go to the Super Bowl twice in the same season. But that's really what it feels like for us at First Liberty, having two cases now at the Supreme Court in the same term. It does feel a little surreal, like going to the Super Bowl twice in the same season. Yeah. We are grateful. We are very blessed.
We're busy.
That's probably the other B word that we can use. Look, for years now we've been saying the battle for religious liberty has never been more important and never more real than it is now. And the fact that, we're now at the Supreme Court twice in the same term. What is this now? Five times in the past 5 years.
Yeah.
Six times in the past 5 years, because, you know, two in one term and four wins in the last 4 years. So that just tells you these battles are not going away anytime soon. In fact, they're only just heating up.
And we're not in on God's thinking about why he chose First Liberty to do all this, but we're grateful for his providence and look forward to pursuing what he's placed in front of us.
Absolutely.
All right. When you ask, I meant to ask just a couple of procedural questions. When might this case with Coach Kennedy be heard?
Based on the history of the Supreme Court and where we are on the calendar, the Supreme Court's calendar, the most likely time that the court will hear the case is April. They'll issue an order for oral argument, and that'll tell us for certain.
Yeah.
They haven't issued that yet as we sit here right now, but most likely April. And we'll probably get a decision sometime in June. My prediction, just my personal prediction, this case is going to be one of the blockbuster cases of the term.
Yeah.
This will be one of the two big what we would call social issues cases. The other one being the Dobbs
case, which is out of Mississippi.
That's the pro-life case that has the potential to overturn Roe v. Wade. This case also has the potential to overturn years of bad Supreme Court precedent as well. So these are the two big blockbuster cases. If history provides any guide, the court usually holds those decisions until the very, very end of the term, which is in June.
And then they go on vacation.
That's right. That's right. Justice Thomas gets in his RV and goes to Nebraska.
Yeah.
Some of the other justices go to their summer homes up, you know, in the Northeast, and et cetera. So, but they issue these decisions, these big blockbuster decisions, right at the end of the term, which kind of gives everybody something to talk about during the summer.
When you ask the Supreme Court to consider any case, and you talked about the writ of certiorari, the petition, in that document, it always comes down, it retells the whole story and has a lot of the detail of the case in there, but it always comes down to, I think most people may not know this, it comes down to a couple of questions that are presented to the justices, and that's really what they're accepting, is they will consider the questions that are in that request. And I want to read those to you straight from the document that we filed.
In lawyer speak, we call them QPs, the question presented, or in this case, the questions presented. And so a lot of times Supreme Court lawyers or Supreme Court practitioners will say, what is the QP in that case?
Yeah.
Because that will signal to them what are the really important issues that the court is actually deciding. Because a lot of times, you know, the media and social media, the traditional media, and just people in general, they can get really bogged down in I mean, not that the facts are not important, but the facts can sometimes lead us away from what the actual legal issue is. It's a lot of times we, just in normal human nature, right, we get very drawn to things that we think are very important, interesting, salient, et cetera.
And we forget.
And that may not actually be what the actual legal case is about.
Yeah.
So the QP for lawyers is, what is this case about legally?
And that's what I want to get into a bit here, because there are the specific facts. We hope Coach Kennedy gets his job back, and that's what a lot of people think of when they hear this. But this goes more broadly than that, and potentially could apply to a lot more people. So let's unpack it a bit. Here's the first question. Question presented, and I'll read it. This is directly from the document we filed, so it sounds a little lawyerly, but I'll have you explain it for us. Whether a public school employee who says a brief quiet prayer by himself while at school and visible to students is engaged in government speech that lacks any First Amendment protection. So what does that get at when they answer that question?
Well, the beautiful thing about that QP is that it's actually worded very simply, and I don't mean simply in the negative sense.
Yeah.
I mean simply in terms of, I think just about anybody can read that and understand exactly what it's asking.
Yeah.
Right? Does the government have the right to fire somebody who is an employee when they engage in religious expression, in this case praying, right, just because people in the public can see them do it, right? Or does that person, is that person protected by the First Amendment when they do that?
Yeah.
And so immediately, a question like that, the way it's worded, should cause people to begin thinking about lots of different scenarios to which that could apply. It doesn't just have to be a football coach.
It could be a teacher on lunch duty who prays over her meal.
That's right. Exactly. Or a school principal who wears a head covering for religious reasons. That's a visible expression of religion or religious faith.
Would this cover a cross necklace?
And so on and so forth. And that's exactly what that type of QP is designed to do, is to cause people to begin thinking and say, you know, there are lots of scenarios where there's some scenarios where I might think, yeah, the government should have the right to fire the person. But then there are other scenarios when they would think, the government shouldn't have the right to fire them.
Right.
And so you're supposed to stop and think, what type of rule are we going to have in this country? Or more importantly, what does the Constitution say about that? Right? What did the framers of the Constitution and the founders of this country, what did they mean when they wrote the words of the First Amendment? And did they mean for that to be limited to only people who are employees of private companies? Or do they mean that if you work for the government, in the case of a public high school football coach, did they did the framers of the Constitution intend for government employees to not have the same rights and not have the same freedoms as everybody else? I certainly don't think so, but you know, that's a question for the justices to decide.
In the specifics of Coach Kennedy's case, the school district, we like to say, kept moving the goalposts. They kept changing what their requests were for him to do. And along the way, one of the things they said was, hey, if you want to walk up the hill off the field, there's a room up there that you can go to and pray out of sight of everybody. I mean, and that's why this question in part is phrased that way, because that's the idea. Do we want to so hide any private religious expression, which is what this was, and personal, I guess, is the better word for it. It's his personal religious expression there on the field. Do we want to hide that from view of everybody? And that's what the school tried to do, and that's what this question is getting at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you and I have been to Bremerton High School and to the football stadium there.
Yeah.
We have stood out on the field, on the 50-yard line, and we've walked from the 50-yard line to the locker rooms.
It's a long hike.
And for the school district to tell Coach Kennedy, or for a court to tell Coach Kennedy, you can pray, but you have to go all the way to that locker room where nobody can see you, because praying is something that needs to be hidden. It's something you should be ashamed of. I mean, they didn't go quite that far, but that's certainly how Coach Kennedy interpreted it, as if him praying and giving thanks for the opportunity to be a coach and for the athletic competition that just occurred, just a simple prayer of thanksgiving, he felt as if he was being told, you should be ashamed of that.
Well, and that speaks to the students, too. I mean, if the school district is allowed to prevail in this, that's teaching the young people in Bremerton, Washington, and all over the country, something about faith.
That's right. It's saying that faith is not valuable. It's faith is something, I mean, this is what... It needs to be hidden. It's something that you should be ashamed of, or that you should not allow other people to see. Yet at the same time, and I don't mean for us to get into, you know, culture war issues or anything like that, but at the same time, we all know that our public schools across the country are telling students that there are all kinds of expressions that they should be proud of and that they shouldn't hide. And so why, on the one hand, would our public schools tell students you should be proud of who you are, you should not hide who your true identity is, et cetera, et cetera. But then tell them in the other, in the very next sentence, unless it happens to do with your religious beliefs. If it has to do with your religious beliefs, then you need to hide it. But I'm going to go out on a limb, Stuart, and say, if Coach Kennedy's religious beliefs happen to be of a minority faith group, I highly doubt they would be telling him he needed to hide it.
And something else I want to point out, just briefly before we move on to the second question. This is not whether Joe Kennedy, who says a brief, quiet prayer by himself, it's whether a public school employee. So when they answer this question, it's for everybody.
That's right. The case is, I mean, ultimately the case is about Coach Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's about whether or not he has the right to do this. But I think as the question presented lays out, and I believe that as the justices will very quickly recognize, it's about so much more than Coach Kennedy. It's about more than Bremerton School District. It's about the rights of millions of America. I mean, that's why I say this is a blockbuster case, because it's going to have a massive impact, a huge ripple effect across the country in terms of whether or not, and look, people, you know, the people who follow First Liberty, who watch First Liberty Live, who follow us on social media, they know this as well. For years now, going all the way back to the beginning of this case in 2015, people have reached out to us. And I mean, I recall reading messages as far back as 2015 saying, I'm a public school football coach or baseball coach or basketball coach or whatever.
Yeah.
And I pray after games or before games, or I'm a teacher in the public schools and I pray over my meal. Am I going to get fired for doing that? You know, and so people are watching what happens in this case because they want to know, how is this going to affect their rights and their freedoms? And I mean, quite frankly, the freedoms of their children and their grandchildren. So again, this is going to have massive implications for millions of Americans and for generations to come.
All right. Question number two, QP number two. Whether, assuming that such religious expression is private and protected by the free speech and free exercise clauses, we'll get to that in a second, the Establishment Clause nevertheless compels public schools to prohibit it. So what they're saying is, even if it's free speech, even if it's free exercise of religion, the Establishment Clause says you still can't do it. Am I reading it right?
Yeah, so this is the tension, if you will, that exists between the Free Exercise Clause and the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment.
And tell us what we're talking about when we talk about that.
All right, so the First Amendment, or at least the first part of the First Amendment, that deals with religious freedom, says, Congress shall create no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Right.
And what the second question presented is asking is, assuming we answered the previous question with a yes, right? Yes, you do have the right under the Free Exercise Clause as a public school employee to engage in brief personal religious expression, right? So Coach Kennedy has the right under the First Amendment to kneel after the football games by himself for 15 seconds and pray. Even if he does have that right, does the school district nevertheless have the right to fire him because it has a concern that him doing that
is
will violate the Establishment Clause?
Establishing a religion.
Right. And so what they're saying there is that, for again, going back to the beginning of this case, the school district has maintained we have to fire him or we have to prohibit him from doing this because and this is where let's suspend belief for a minute and say somebody in the stands might see Coach Kennedy praying after the game by himself. And because he's wearing a Bremerton High School jacket or a Bremerton High School polo shirt, they're going to think that the government is formally establishing religion.
Like the Church of America.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because a football coach is praying by himself, the government is establishing a government religion in America. And that's essentially the school district's argument, is that we're so worried about that, that people are going to think that, that we had to tell him to stop. We just could not run the risk of people thinking that Bremerton School District is establishing a national religion for the entire country.
Now, there's something in here that's easy to miss unless you've been following this case all the way along, and it's this part of the question I just read. It's whether it's protected by the free speech and free exercise clauses. The first time we brought this case, this is the second time it's been up to the Supreme Court, we brought it as a free speech case. There's a reason for that I'd like you to unpack, but this time we're also adding free exercise to the question.
Well, so let's start all the way back again in 2015, all right? At that time, the Supreme Court looked very different than it looks right now.
Yeah.
The late Justice Scalia was still on the court. The late Justice Ginsburg was still on the court. And, you know, and so, like I said, the composition of the court was very different. And so the strategy that attorneys used in terms of which types of issues they would potentially bring to the court were very different than they are now. And at that time, the conventional wisdom was, in a case like this, you don't bring a free exercise claim. You only bring a free speech claim. And the reason for that conventional wisdom is, under the free exercise clause that we just discussed a second ago, there is a case that's called Employment Division versus Smith that's been around for a little over 30 years now. All right.
Yep.
So it's been around for a while. And it has continued to be a giant thorn in the side of free exercise clause claims. And so usually people would avoid bringing free exercise clause claims because of the Smith case.
It made it harder to win.
Made it very hard to win.
Yeah.
And we also knew that based on the composition of the Supreme Court in 2015, that we were unlikely to get the court to overturn Smith. Because people's next question is, well, then why don't you just ask the court to overturn that bad case?
Exactly, because that's hard to do, one.
Right. Number one, getting the court to overturn, you know, decades of precedence is very difficult. And two, given the composition of the court at that time,
not going to happen.
It was unlikely. So we didn't bring a free exercise claim. We only brought a free speech claim. And then fast forward roughly 3 or 4 years. By that point, we had gone through the district court. We had gone through the Ninth Circuit. And we had made it to the Supreme Court the first time around. We asked the Supreme Court to take the case. And as you said, Stuart, we only brought the free speech claim because of the reasons I just laid out.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court said, and I'm paraphrasing here, we're not ready to take the case yet. We need the trial court to answer some more questions and do a little more fact-finding, and then we might be ready to hear this case.
Which, let me just tell people understand. So they looked at it. They said, we're not going to say no. but if you're going to bring this case, we need this extra stuff. And then they added,
well, they said, the answer is no right now,
okay,
but go
yeah.
back,
yeah,
right, get the judge to do some more factual development, and then come back, or, you know, yeah. if you want to, come back, right?
And by the way.
And then there was this very, it's called a statement respecting the denial of certiorari.
Okay.
Right? That's the long, fancy way of saying it.
Yeah.
And it's basically an asterisk, okay, next to the, we're not taking this case.
Right now.
There was an asterisk next to it.
Yeah.
And it was four of the justices. And those four, and by this point, we had two new justices on the court. Justice Gorsuch was new,
yeah.
and Justice Kavanaugh was new. So, very different court now. And four of those justices said, hey, we noticed, first of all, the Ninth Circuit's decision, very troubling.
Yeah.
Very, very troubling. So it was sort of a red flag or a yellow flag saying, you know, we don't really like what the Ninth Circuit did here. We're not ready to take it yet, but we don't like what they did. But also, we also noticed that, and I'm paraphrasing, right, for
right.
our audience.
Yeah.
We also noticed that you only brought a free speech claim and you didn't bring a free exercise claim. We think we know why. And it's because of that Smith decision that we talked about a few minutes ago. And we realized that Smith decision has been out there for a long time, and it's probably the reason why you didn't bring a free exercise claim. Because you're smart and you recognize the Smith decision was probably going to be a massive obstacle. And the court is not going to tell people, not going to tell practitioners what to do or what not to do.
But they essentially
signaled
it.
They can drop hints, okay?
Yeah. Well, this was a big hint.
They dropped a not-so-subtle hint.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's time for us to revisit that case.
Yeah.
If somebody were to bring a case, you know, asking us to revisit it.
Which, to put it in context, coming from four justices of the Supreme Court in that kind of statement, which is unusual to get this statement anyway, and then they add that kind of language, that's shocking. I mean, that's a bell ringing.
Yeah, around. They don't drop asterisks, you know, on cert denials very often as it is,
yeah.
right? And then for them to sort of lay out a roadmap.
Here's what you need to do.
Here's what you need to do if you want to come back.
So this right. time we came back
it was kind of like the Wizard of Oz, right? You know, bring me the hat of the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, and so off we went, right? And we did exactly what the Supreme Court suggested. We went back to the trial court.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, we talk about how long it's taken for this case to get to the Supreme Court. And that's some of the procedural history as to why. We've actually been up to the Supreme Court, back all the way back down to the trial court, and then back up through the trial court and the Ninth Circuit again. So it's been up and down twice now. And that's how long, I mean, the old saying is the wheels of justice turn slowly.
And that speaks to the dedication. I want to praise him here for everybody to hear of Joe Kennedy to hang in with this, because a lot of people give up. They'd say, all right, this has disrupted my life enough. I'm done. See ya. But he has hung in with this literally for 7 years up and down through the courts and had this hanging over him that whole time. God bless him for doing that.
That's right. And I do want to also pat First Liberty on the back a little bit too, and to say we've hung with him.
Yeah.
You know, it's no easy feat to get a case to the Supreme Court. To get the same case there twice takes a lot of dedication. It also takes a lot of resources,
yeah.
right? I mean, let's just be frank about it. These cases, First Liberty does them free of charge from our
Joe
client's perspective.
Joe will never get a bill from us.
None of our clients will ever get a bill from us. But that doesn't mean that it's free to us, right? And so we continue to provide everything that Coach Kennedy needs, and we can continue to provide the, you know, through generous donations of our supporters. That's really the only way we're able to do this. So if you really want to think about it, if it were not for First Liberty supporters and donors and those who love freedom and love religious freedom, we would not have the opportunity to vindicate Coach Kennedy's rights and to potentially overturn 3 decades of bad precedents in this country. That's the real world and real life effect of what it means to donate and support an organization like First Liberty.
And this is why I wanted to have this conversation with you today, because people are reading the headlines, they're seeing it in the news, and we all wish that the school district would back off and allow Coach Kennedy to just take a knee and say a silent prayer. But there is so much more at stake here, and there's such a larger issue of overturning, as you mentioned, 30 years of bad precedent that's made it hard to pursue free exercise cases. This could really change how courts consider religious freedom cases from here on forward. It has the potential to do that.
That's right. There's no guarantee. And, you know, there are some Supreme Court doctrines that the justices are likely to employ. Yeah. And one of them that is if they can decide a case and reach an outcome without having to overturn precedent or decide constitutional issues. It's called the doctrine of constitutional avoidance is the fancy term for it.
Yeah.
So in other words, if I can decide this sort of at the lowest level possible, if I don't have to come all the way up to the Constitution and decide this case on those issues, then I'm duty bound as a judge or as a justice to decide it at the lowest level possible. And you know what? We'll take it, right?
Yeah.
A win is a win, just like in the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter if you win it on a field goal, if you win the game in overtime. The only thing that matters is in the history books it says you won the game. And at this point, we'll take a win for Coach Kennedy and for religious freedom. Certainly, do we want the Supreme Court to overturn the Smith decision? Absolutely.
And it's worth pointing out again that four of the justices are the ones who brought that into the conversation.
And we just need one more to go along. So if four of the justices are already in agreement, yeah. Which I don't know, I'm just assuming here that they're at least in tacit agreement that Smith needs to be at least revisited, if not overturned. If one more justice can go with them and say, I agree with you, then we this could be a paradigm shift in religious liberty.
Anything else you'd like to share before I let you go? That's all very insightful and what I really wanted to get at today to help all of us understand the import of this case. It's huge.
Well, I think we've covered all the high points, right? The amount of time that it's taken and why it's taken this long and what it means and the impact that it's going to have for religious freedom in this country. I also think that it's worth pointing out that, Coach Kennedy is a retired Marine Corps combat veteran. And when the school district began bullying him and picking on him back in 2015, I think they made a huge mistake that they probably recognize now, but they're not willing to admit. They messed with the wrong Marine. And because he's not willing to back down, he knows what his rights are and his freedoms are because he fought for those freedoms. And so for them to tell him, right, we appreciate your service to our country and the sacrifices you made for our freedoms, including our religious freedom, but you no longer have those rights as an American citizen, that was just a bridge too far. And so I just want to, as you did earlier, commend Coach for having the courage to stand up for what he believed was right. And that's really, at the end of the day, what this country and religious freedom is all about. Is, President Reagan famously said, freedom is never more than one generation away from being lost. But the way we stop that from happening is it takes one person, just one football coach in little Bremerton, Washington, to stand up and say, this is not right, and this will not happen on my watch. And so I encourage everybody who can hear my voice to use Coach Kennedy as an example to say, you know what, if he could stand up, and it took a long time to get there, but if he could stand up and fight this fight and hopefully, prayerfully, ultimately win, then I can too. So if your freedom, if your religious freedom is being threatened or under attack anywhere in America, then you should also have the boldness to stand up and say, you know what? This is a battle I'm willing to fight.
Very good. Mike Berry, thank you so much. Lots of good insight in there, lots of helpful information. Thank you.
As always.
I talked to Coach Kennedy on the sidelines there at the football field when we were there, it was last year. And one of the things he told me was that he knew in that moment, because this had become such a big thing, that when he walked out to the middle of the field, it probably was the last time he would set foot on that field as a coach. But he made the decision to do it anyway. And he just felt like God's protection would be over him as he did that. That is a tough decision. And if you'd like to offer a word of encouragement, we have a letter of support for Coach Kennedy on our website. You can go to firstliberty.org/Coach Joe. Look for the big blue button that says Join Team Kennedy. When you click on that, It'll let you sign off on the letter of support, but there's also a spot there where you can write a personal note of encouragement. And we will pass all of those along to him, because that encouragement is part of what makes this work. And also, if you'd like to support our work here at First Liberty as we do this, we can only do this because of you. It's the only way that we get to make this happen. We're so grateful for your support. And let me just say thank you in advance for anything you send our way to help us with fight these fights and to pursue these cases. We will have regular updates on this case as it goes along. No surprise there. So keep an eye out on First Liberty Live, and we'll let you know what's going on. And we will see you next time right here on First Liberty Live.